Good morning, everybody. It is the 19th of August, 2021. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio, which, as you probably know, is the voice of the American Consortium for Equity in Education. We're over at ACE, ACE-ED.org, ACE-ED.org, and that's exactly where we're going to be archiving this podcast we're doing today and where we archive all our podcasts. Plus, it is the home of our wonderful magazine, our online journal called Equity and Access Pre-K-12. Everything we do over there is free for educators, and we hope you take a gander over there or just click through to ace-ed.org. Join with us. We want to have your voice heard in the never-ending quest for equity. And on that note, as you all know, this term, so culturally responsive teaching these days is a big deal, okay? And they have that term bandying around called critical race theory, which is a term I do not like, but I understand what it is. However, culturally relevant pedagogy is extremely important as we talk about equity and make, if I may, make education interesting to kids of every color, every stripe, every nationality. So on that note, we have an expert in the field today. Dr. John Shambari is with us, and John's an improvement coach, okay, who too works on the development of teaching practices. He has worked as a middle school teacher, a high school social studies teacher, a high school principal, all right, K-12 leadership, and also has worked internationally in such places as Saudi Arabia, the UK, okay, and Japan, as well as the United Arab Emirates. And if anybody I would think knows anything about culturally relevant pedagogy, it would be John, Dr. John Shambari. It's Larry here. Welcome to the show. Hi, John.
Thank you, Larry, for having me. I'm excited to chat with you today.
Well, we're thrilled you're here today, and you got a lot of good things to say. Before we start into the culturally relevant stuff, just tell us about you, because I love your – so many teachers would be envious, so many educators of what you've done, starting off in middle school, okay, and then going on and traveling all over the world to promote education. Just talk about how all that evolved.
Sure. So back when I was in college, I was studying international relations, and I was actually going to go into the government, go into the State Department, really become a policy wonk, if you will. And along that journey, it turned out that I ended up meeting other friends and peers who had taught English in Japan on the JET Exchange and Teaching Program. And so while I was pursuing that mythical career in government, I decided to take a hiatus and teach English in Japan for 2 years. And I'm very glad I did, because coming back, that really prompted me to kind of switch gears and to move into education. So I've always had an interest in globalism, and I really was able to apply that to my teaching practice.
That is fabulous, and you really did, and as I say, a lot of people would be jealous of all the wonderful things you've accomplished, Dr. John, okay, and the places you've been, etc. And I think, as we talk about culturally relevant pedagogy, I think that background internationally makes a big difference, because you've seen a lot of different people, a lot of different cultures, a lot of different customs all over the world. Does that affect the way you look at culturally responsive education?
Definitely. So in particular, when I was teaching English in Japan, as you're saying, Larry, not only did I learn more about Japanese culture as well as my own in terms of my own actions and the way I perceive things, there's no better way to learn about who you are by looking through a prism of others, right?
That's a very good point.
You know, so definitely learn that. But at the same time, by being on the JET Exchange program, I also saw how Japanese educators educate. And that was also something that I brought back into my teaching practice. So, yes, there's the whole question of, are we understanding and valuing multiple perspectives and multiple cultures in our teaching practice? but there are also the strategies for teaching that I learned when I was over there as well.
It's so cool. And I just have, since you just brought it up, and I want to get into culturally responsive, what were the difference between a Japanese educator and an American educator? You said you brought back some of their better traits. What would just as an example be?
Definitely. So we are actually starting to see some of this in American education. And one of the best practices I saw over there was definitely Japanese lesson study, where a group of teachers would sit down together, they would co-plan a lesson, one teacher would deliver it, others would be observing and commenting upon it, they'd come back, they'd debrief, they'd tweak the lesson, and then another teacher in that group would then go teach the lesson. So not only did it perfect the teaching for students, but it also acted as an in-house internal professional learning opportunity for teachers. Again, we see that now, Larry, here. Many schools now in the United States are starting to do lesson study, but at the time I was in Japan, it hadn't crossed the ocean yet.
Well, it's a great idea, and again, it's all about collaboration, isn't it? Okay, for too long we closed the door and we're left alone, and we learned, I think, the hard way that that's not the best way to do things. We all, as fellow professionals, have a lot to offer. And I might add interdisciplinary as well, not just the social studies department talking about it, but all the departments talking about lessons like that. That kind of coordination really pays off. I really believe it does. And so cultural relationships start right there. John, you become an expert, okay, in culturally responsive education, culturally responsive pedagogy, the method of teaching, okay? I just talk about that. When I use those terms, and I mentioned critical race theory, if you want to even bring that up, okay, if you feel like it's part of it, just talk about that. In your opinion, in the way you look at it, what is culturally relevant pedagogy?
Sure. So I do think there's a difference between culturally relevant pedagogy and critical race theory that we could talk about. But in terms of culturally relevant pedagogy, you could think of that as simply teaching that builds upon students' individual and cultural backgrounds. And the reason why we want to do that when we're planning our lessons, or at least think about that, is because student engagement at any age level is really critical to getting students vested in their learning. So the more that we could bring in examples from a student's background, the more chance we'll have that student will become interested in what is being taught and see the relevance to whatever's being taught in their own lives.
Agreed. Go ahead, please. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Continue.
Oh, no worries. So critical race theory, from my understanding, is more a theory about our systems and practices, and are those systems and practices equitable or not equitable? And clearly in the theory of critical race theory, they are not.
Yes.
So I see the two as distinct entities.
They
are.
But
with that said, if we do employ, Larry, culturally relevant pedagogy, that can act as a means to an end in starting to ensure that our systems and our practices moving forward are more equitable.
I agree, and people have to understand where things are. I'll just say this, and then I'm going to move back to the other thing. With critical race theory, I don't like the terminology. To me, it is an extremely, if I may, aggressive terminology, okay? And it's not what we're trying to do here. What we're trying to do is put a different perspective on aspects of American history, okay? And look at the institutionalization, if I may, of racism, which is there. But we have to do that in relation to everything else, all right? And I think it's important we take a look at it. Okay, but we don't have to give it a label that incites people. That's my feeling on it.
And
what do you do?
And I understand that feeling, Larry. And I think I don't think you're alone in feeling that. I know it's a very polarizing topic. Whereas culturally relevant pedagogy, I believe is a strategy that I believe more people can immediately get behind.
I couldn't agree with you more, as a matter of fact. I think it's just so important. But let me ask you, I was a history teacher for years and years and years, okay? And I get culturally relevant pedagogy when teaching social studies, okay? But you go into whole school districts, John, okay, and you're talking to the math teacher, the gym teacher, okay, the science teacher, okay, and I don't think when you say culturally relevant pedagogy, you're not thinking of a mention in Science of George Washington Carver and his peanuts, okay? Okay, you're thinking of something a bit deeper, if in fact that's the case. Look at it, and elementary school, I get it too, but talk to everybody about across the board, because I believe it has to be across the board, okay? It's a challenge for everyone to incorporate. But how do we do that? Have you had that question? Where do we go from here?
Oh, I have that question all the time, Larry.
There you go.
And you're right. You know, when I say culturally relevant pedagogy, that is culturally relevant pedagogy across all content areas. Yes, I think it's very easily integrated into social studies or history content. But like you said, that's not the only place. So, for example, if I was working with a math teacher, I might take a look at their word problems. Are they using cultural examples? Because a lot of teachers will often like to use sporting examples in word problems looking at or sports statistics. You know, you obviously could do that, looking and developing those word problems, taking into account the particular sports your students like. Now, that's a simple example, but I do think it's a very important one because we're starting as a field to also get better with our assessments. So even when we look at when we're assessing students, are we integrating case studies, problem sets, word problems that students are immediately going to be able to relate to? Because we found that even on our assessments, the level of access that a student has getting into the assessment will affect the outcome. So why not be providing examples from a student's cultural background or even just their interests rather than providing some esoteric or some example from mainstream, let's say, suburban white culture, right?
Exactly.
Suburban
and my favorite story is that. Wait, I was talking, John, to one of the testing companies. We were talking about this very subject, okay? And they said it took them a few years to realize that they've changed it. There were some questions involving, college entrance exams. They were questions involving racing yachts. Okay, if a racing yacht leaves Newport at 300 miles an hour, okay, with its sails, and you know, this made absolutely no sense to any urban kid. Okay, rural kid, if I may, or somebody from Nebraska. Okay, not to generalize about people from Nebraska, but there's no ocean there. Okay, and my point is, you know, you're exactly right. That would obviously a child, unless he guessed right, with his score would be lower. All right, and it's lower because he culturally did not know what in hell they were talking about. All right, and please, am I on the right track here?
You're totally on the right track. And then not only is it important to be providing these cultural references like we're talking about to provide those multiple access points, even from a self-efficacy and the perspective of developing one sense of self, I know that as a learner, I feel better about myself and my capabilities when what I am learning is related to the strengths and the knowledge that I already possess. And so that's another reason why we want to really be doing culturally relevant pedagogy, because we want to start looking at our students from a perspective of strength rather than deficit, particularly
wonderful
in urban, traditionally
wonderful
marginalized communities.
Absolutely. And that changes the perspective of teaching, all right? And, John, I don't know if you know the answer to this, but I love asking this question. What you're saying is absolutely right. In culturally responsive education, I'm going to use the word trend. It's trending now, but hopefully it'll stay there, and it's not a trend. It becomes part and parcel of everything we do. My question is, and this is something back when I was in school a million years ago, American history was white, all right, if I may. And when I went into teaching, I had African-American students, this is way back when, who said, can we have a black history course? And I said, you could, but unfortunately I know nothing about black history. Okay, I would be teaching you stuff you could learn yourself because I'd be learning, you know, and it was that kind of thing. And my question being, and that was wrong back then, but that was a long, long time ago, all right? And not making excuses, by the way, it was dead wrong. But my point is, all right, these days, do you see that a change? Have you thought about this or whatever in education schools, in the training of teachers to be culturally responsive? And the reason I say that, all these changes seem to fall on the school district's professional development. They hire experts like you to go in and make it better. All right, but the kids that are in college right now for education, are they getting better training in culturally responsive pedagogy? Again, if you haven't thought about it, that's fine too, but it's a question that needs to be answered. John?
Sure. So to answer that, I would say it definitely depends on the school training our student teachers or training our future teachers. Some universities, I believe, do a better job in training our future educators on culturally relevant pedagogy than others. I believe that you'll probably find, but I could be wrong here, you'll probably find that culturally relevant pedagogy is taught more in urban schools of education. But again,
yeah,
culturally relevant pedagogy is applicable to all school systems, not just urban ones, because
right,
every school has diversity. Every school has, students who gravitate towards one thing versus another.
Yeah.
With that said, I would argue that, you know, even though we do want more of our universities to be preparing our student teachers to deliver culturally relevant pedagogy, at the same time, by having, you know, experts coming in or having, you know, a PLC internally to a school thinking about and talking about culturally relevant pedagogy is also a great way for a school to make up those gaps that a teacher might not have gotten in their training. Because there are so many resources now, Larry, in
yep,
culturally relevant pedagogy that even if an internal school wanted to do, say, a book study or wanted to look at the issue of culturally relevant pedagogy in a lesson study practice, the opportunity to do that is there. So that's just a very long-winded way of answering your question and saying
no,
that
wasn't
yes.
It all. Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
It wasn't at all. I have a thought on this. Okay, John, this question, okay, culturally responsive education, I'm going to say this the right way, but I don't think I'm going to. Is it better, I'm going to say, for an urban kid? Or actually, is it necessary, and you mentioned this before, but I'm not thinking in terms of the diverse population. I think culturally responsive education, okay, when we teach that, it creates a better harmony among the students and among the population, okay? It's not just for the group we're talking about or the group we're pinpointing. Excuse me. I think it's for the whole, okay? And I think it has great things for the whole, okay? The whole class, all the kids, as opposed to just particular ethnic groups. What do you think on that? I hope I phrased that properly.
You phrased that perfectly fine. I totally agree. Because, yes, up to this point, we have been talking about culturally relevant pedagogy to get, again, traditionally marginalized students, to give them a sense of efficacy and to highlight their strengths. But as you're pointing out, why not be exposing students in the mainstream culture to the contributions as well as role of other people and other races, as well as, you know, how all of us collectively have contributed to America, to the United States. So, yes, I agree there. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't think that there should be resources that, again, relate to the culture of a particular dominant student demographic in a particular school. I think there's a place for both. You know, but like you're saying, yes, I think we all benefit from learning how we collaboratively have contributed to our society, as well as the fact that, again, and I'll bring it back up, you know, there is diversity everywhere. There's the seen diversity, and then there's the unseen diversity. And we as educators need to tap into both of those aspects of diversity.
It has such an impact right across the board. It helps everybody, in my opinion. Okay, and I just think it's a good thing. You go into school districts. What's the favorite anecdotal story or the favorite thing you've heard or seen from teachers, educators working with culturally responsive education? Do you have any favorites that pop into your mind? The best examples.
I do, and I'm actually good. Yeah, I'm going to give you a great example, and I'm going to give you a lost opportunity example.
Perfect.
The great example was I was working, doing some coaching on a Native American reservation, and the teacher was an ELA teacher, excuse me, and she was teaching parts of a persuasive essay, and she was using an article about the Lakota powwow. And so by drawing upon what her students already knew, drawing upon this First Nations experience, I believe that she was able to immediately, or at least better, hook her students into the topic. They completely understood what the topic was about, so then they could focus on the mechanics of the essay itself. So that was an example that I really loved seeing.
Yeah.
And then I was working.
By the way,
exactly,
how old were those kids? So I just wanted that class, were they high school kids? What were they?
Those were middle school students. But
cool.
Again, like
even
you
more
were
exciting.
Saying before, Larry, you could do this throughout K-12.
Of course.
And I would even argue our university should be doing more of this as well.
Absolutely. You won that argument. You won that argument. Congratulations. Right. Of course,
you know, and then what's that, Larry? I apologize.
Yeah. No, go. You go. You were going to give
us
a second example of a lost opportunity.
Sure, and ironically, it is. I'll give you a second example.
Be my guest. Go.
So, so you mentioned science before. So
yeah.
I was doing some work in an urban school system, and I saw a middle school teacher teaching about environment and biomes, and they utilized the simple example of a goldfish in a bowl to get students into that topic. So again, you see that's something that multiple students from multiple cultures can relate to. So I would say that was another good, very simple example, you know, in terms of a good example. And then the one missed opportunity, and just with a few tweaks, it could have been a stellar example, was I was doing work in a high school in New York City. And the teacher was a social studies teacher and was teaching the Holocaust. And while there were resources there, while the teacher had definitely done their due diligence in developing a plan, so I don't want to say that the instruction was poor. It wasn't. It was proficient instruction. Students were learning. There were, like I said, those resources that were leveled and differentiated for students. So all of that was very good. But in giving a packet, the teacher gave a packet of resources to students that really could have been better tailored to bring in his students' particular experiences with difference or, with cultural misunderstandings between them and other groups. And clearly, if I've learned anything in my time teaching, our students want to talk about justice. Our students are hardwired to talk about fairness. So what would have been, that would have been an amazing way to then start hooking students into actually having a discussion about, tolerance and diversity. And then on top of that, there were some primary source posters and Nazi-era propaganda in the packet, but it was very small. It was like 1-inch squares. It was black and white.
Didn't have the impact.
It didn't have the impact. And some of those actually dealt with the Nazi reaction to people of other races. But again, the teacher did not really maximize the opportunity there to really discuss that with their students.
And I must ask, just as you're talking about this, was this in a school that was mostly black African-American kids or Latino?
It was.
And as you said that, the reason I asked that is because the first thing that came to mind, the Holocaust is an important topic, but it's an important topic as it relates to today, because the topic is really genocide. All right?
Correct.
And you look at, you know this, John, everybody listening knows this, but you look at like Rwanda just 25 years ago, whatever that was, okay, that mess between the Hutus and the Tutsis there, all right? And that genocide was absolutely unbelievable in this tiny African country, okay? And you can find this, of course, with Asian folks too, with the Rohingyas Laos or Cambodia and Bangladesh. Okay? I mean, and the point is, if you use what people say is the Holocaust, which it was, okay, as a jump to genocide today and make it relevant to their groups, people begin to understand what's going on. Okay? They understand the horror of this. You are dead on right with this, my friend. That should have been a much bigger lesson. Same thing.
I totally agree. Because otherwise, if you don't make it culturally relevant, why would I, if I'm growing up in downtown Manhattan, why would I care about an event that happened 70 years ago on a continent 3,000-4,000 miles away to people who did not look like me, who did not have the same experiences as me?
Exactly. But if you start to – I'm not going to do this. We're just preaching to the choir here. I mean, it's pretty darn obvious what we need to do with all this. And the other thing I want to ask you about that lesson, to me, that lesson would be incredibly important, even more so, okay, which is amazing, if it can be done in an interdisciplinary fashion. And have you seen a lot, and I'm very big on interdisciplinary, and with the culturally responsive and teachers working together, like you said at the beginning of our conversation, okay, there's a lot of room here for better education through interdisciplinary. People don't just think about social studies and then stop and start thinking about Charles Dickens. Okay? That's not the way the world works. That's not the way our mind works. When you talk to educators, do you talk a lot about the interdisciplinary stuff when we're talking about this?
And thank you for bringing that up, Larry. And we are, as a profession, I think, getting better with that as well. Now, we are starting to see more examples of, interdisciplinary connections, particularly between math and science, as well as between, say, social studies and language arts. So, for example, I've worked in one or two schools that use the book The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks.
Oh, sure.
Also bringing up issues of inequality, to bring up issues of society and medical ethics and social studies while the English teacher was focusing on literacy development. So we do see, I believe, more of that. And there are, again, more resources online to help teachers with that. And then we also do see that combination of math and science, particularly around the use of data and tables. So I do think we're getting better at that.
I'm going to remind you of something really cool.
Oh,
okay,
yeah, go for
I always say this. Nothing happens in science that doesn't affect society. The purpose of science is to make a better society. The purpose of engineering, we talk about STEM. The purpose of STEM, okay, is to create a better society. You take that word society, you've got social studies, all right? And we always said over the past 20 years, oh, STEM has replaced social studies as important. That was a huge mistake, okay? You can't separate science from understanding society, all right? And, you know, to me, that should be part and parcel of every school's interdisciplinary approach. All right, and I think that's
totally agree.
You know, it's just that simple. You know, I'm asking you a lot of questions. So first, before I forget, how do people get in touch with you? Well, what's the best way to get? Yeah, excuse me for not asking sooner. Go ahead. Yeah, excuse
me. No worries at all. So the best way to get in touch with me is to actually go through LinkedIn. So I have a LinkedIn profile, John Chambery, EDD. You can find me there, and that is the best place for people to contact me. You could also contact me by email at John A. Chambery, Schembari, at MSN.com.
Give me that LinkedIn again. I'll put it on the thing here. Give me the LinkedIn again. Good.
Okay,
your
so
LinkedIn.
My LinkedIn is John Chambery, EDD. And then my email is johnachambery@msn.com.
Well, I got this all mixed up here. Hold on. LinkedIn is John Chambery, D-E-D?
E-D-D.
E-D-D. That's what I did here properly. Okay. Got it here. Okay. That's good. All right. And as long as that's here, they have a way to get in touch with you. Okay. That's good.
Love it.
I'm just putting that here in the show description so they have it.
Oh, I love it, Larry. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Oh, thanks. I wanted to touch back on something you had said or something you had asked about interdisciplinary units. I mean, this can be a whole other topic for you, Larry, perhaps with another guest. But I think equally as important as having those interdisciplinary, culturally relevant lessons, then we also get into the question of how well teachers team teach, how well teachers coordinate their actions.
Oh, yeah.
Again, that's more of a topic than what we have time for today.
I love that
today.
Topic.
But again,
are you an expert,
are you an expert
on that, John? Could you do that show?
I could do that show.
Well, we'll put that together. I'll get in touch. Let's get in touch with each other a little later today and pick a date for that. That's just
great.
Going
and
with
I'll
me.
Even see... you know, to get some diversity of voice because we're talking culturally relevant pedagogy.
That would be nice.
I'll also see if I have a colleague that would be interested in doing that.
They would be more than welcome. Okay, one or two
Love
colleagues
it.
Would be just fine. I wanted to ask you one thing. I'm asking a lot of questions. We've got to wind down soon. But I could have missed something. I'm just curious about this. When you go into a school district, talk to teachers or talk to administrators, I've asked a lot of questions. What comes to mind is the top question or questions they ask you? Did I miss anything?
No, I think you hit on the big ones. I mean, clearly, the number one goal for any school should be student achievement and growth. And given my focus on academics, I mean, other people focus on the operations of a school.
Sure.
Because clearly, you know, if the lights aren't on, students can't learn. If you don't have technology, as we saw from this past year, students can't learn. But I wouldn't say that that is my area of expertise. So when I go into a school, I'm really looking at their academics. And I think there are three key questions there. One, you know, what is it that I want my students to learn and be able to do? So what are your learning intentions? Are those aligned to rigorous standards? The second question is, how do I know my students know and can do what I want them to do? That's the assessment piece. And assessment in all its myriad forms. And then the third part of that, which I think culturally relevant pedagogy fits right into, is how am I going to engage my students within that process of learning? That, you know, the student engagement piece is where culturally relevant pedagogy fits in, but there is, like we talked about before, the connection to assessment and the connection to the learning standard that you're actually teaching, but also student engagement also deals with things such as differentiation and really meeting the students where the students are at. So again, culturally relevant pedagogy fits really nice into that.
Right. That is wonderful. That's a good one. We have to leave because we're running out of time, my friend. We're going to do more. I will get in touch with you later today, and we're going to set up a day for that next show. Does that sound good?
Love it. Sounds great, Larry. Thank you.
John, thank you. You have a great day, okay? I really appreciate this. This was a wonderful conversation, terrific show. Thank you.
Love it, Larry. Thank you for your time and for inviting me. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. You take care, John. Okay, bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye. John Shembari, everybody, S-C-H-E-M-B-A-R-I. And I'll just say it again here, but it's on the description. John Shembari, EDD on LinkedIn. Okay, and you can just Google him and you'll find him. Okay, John Shembari, okay? Good stuff. All right, we're going to archive the show over at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. We'll have it up there a bit later today. That's our website. Enjoy our magazine and everything we do for equity over there. It's important you join with us in our consortium. Again, it's all free, including our magazine at ace-ed.org. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.